is the second side of the interview with Herbert Weisinger.
In one way or the other. Number 10? I think I told you why I thought I was appointed.
Mm-hmm.
11? I had the expectations all of us did that we would become a top-flight graduate and research center.
Right.
In a comprehensive state university, I think the answer to that is only partway.
Mm-hmm.
The expectations worked out wonderfully well for me. I enjoyed every minute of it. I have to confess, I enjoyed the politics. I enjoyed the building. I enjoyed meeting people. I can't complain. I personally... The 13 is obviously, I think I've answered that.
Yes.
Because I was all over the place, Albany, Washington. When do you feel you accomplished Stony Brook by 1971? I survived. No, I think I've made some of the things. I think in naming individuals, I've named individuals. I should mention Sidney, who had a marvelous ability. How shall I put it? To make people relate to each other.
He was a good catalyst.
He was an excellent catalyst.
Right.
Great pacifier and compromiser. I wish he had sometimes been more forceful.
Yes.
But that was not his way. On the other hand, I have to say I'm eternally thankful to him because I have no doubt, though, he never said a word to me. And more than once, people said, get rid of me. You know, I reported directly to Sidney. You know, he'd never said a word to me. In fact, I can also truthfully say he never once told me what to do. Nor did Johnny. If I made a mistake, they wouldn't stop me and let me suffer the consequences. Sometimes I deliberately made a mistake, but I always knew that they would back me up. And I guess, as I try to examine why they backed me up, I guess they recognized that I was committed, devoted to the ideal of what we were talking about. I had no other ambitions. I had, by the time I got to be dean, I had acquired whatever reputation as a scholar I was going to get. I felt secure in that area. I wasn't the greatest scholar in the world. I know that. I wasn't the worst. I had published enough and done enough to be recognized. In fact, a number of people who wrote letters of recommendation for me asked me why I wanted to give up any fact of scholarly career.
You have to if you're going with
that. Oh, I did that. But it's something I wanted to do, to try it as an experience. But they never interfered with me. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
I honestly was never once told not to do something. And indeed, I was never once told to do something. Such freedom is unbelievable. I'm a very fortunate man. To have gotten paid for doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And to have had the freedom I had. So I'm eternally grateful.
I remember that I had been on the job about two or three weeks when a faculty member, professor came in.
Excuse me, yes. Leonard would like to break into your conversation
minute.
Here are some of the questions that I have thought of. You have handled these, I think, certainly in part. First question was the quality of graduate work when you came, sciences, social sciences, humanities,
well,
and engineering.
There were very few graduate programs when I came. I think most of the graduate programs we have now were instituted while I was dean. The outstanding department when I came was physics. Chemistry was highly regarded. But as I said before, I don't think chemistry has ever been on the level of physics. It had the same opportunities, but I think didn't have quite the flair that physics was able to show.
the leadership not quite...
Not quite as imaginative.
Yes.
Not quite as daring.
Yes.
In its appointments. You know, you can take that?
You're following me.
Oh. So, those were... I think those are the... That was the major... Those are the two major departments when I came. History was there, of course. English. Music didn't have a PhD program.
No.
You know, I can't even remember now.
Do you have any field for engineering? What's engineering?
It fell under my purview, of course. That's funny, I never did much in engineering. Again, for what I could gather, and this got pretty far afield for me, and I think the departments were pretty even, except my great problem with engineering from the point of view of administration was the excessive number of foreign students.
Yeah.
And I got into quite a lot of trouble. And Johnny was not happy when I published the breakdown of the origins of graduate students. You know, I had blacks and women. You know, we were under compulsions in those days. For all I know, one may still be. Women and foreign students and native students, and the proportions were terrible from the point of view of public relations, not to mention from the point of view of the legislature. I had that experience in other places. I knew what they were thinking. I just had to cut it back, and they didn't thank me for that. I don't think Johnny was very happy about it. But I kept pretty good statistics on departments. For example, I knew how many applications each department received. I knew how many offers were made. I knew how many students accepted the offer. And I knew how many actually came. You know, you got a very good fix on a department that way.
Yes.
And, you know, somebody in the humanities is not supposed to know those things. I also knew how many NSF fellows were coming to Stony Brook. And I knew the general criteria, besides the local one. You had to distinguish always between what people told you what the situation actually was.
That's one of the, that's one of my questions, the yardstick, the difference in standards of comparison that I ran into. And I was wondering about whether you did. When I came, they were thinking in New York terms, New York State terms. And Harry Porter would tell me how much progress they had made from where they had been to where they were now within the state of New York.
That's not a criteria.
No. But, and I was trying to think in terms of comparable institutions.
Oh, yeah, it's a national criterion.
Yes. They were not thinking that way.
I know that. I would say one of the reasons why SUNY never really quite made it was the quality of the top leadership.
Within the state.
Within Albany, some of the people...
Except Philip Rockefeller.
Yeah, well, I know, but he didn't have the right people. I don't know about Gould. Are you going to interview him?
Yes. Monday morning.
Monday morning. I think he tried very well to think of it in national terms. But I don't think the people under him had that same sense. You know, one of the consequences of these doctoral program evaluations that I sat through for so many years is a tremendous respect for Cornell. Cornell was virtually first-rate in every department we did. Columbia was much more uneven. Interestingly enough, much more. I mean, more reputation than performance. But Cornell was excellent. Just a pleasure to evaluate their programs. But one of the pleasures is reading dossiers of people in physics and math compared to reading dossiers in the social sciences. The dossiers in physics and math are superb. Man writing a letter of recommendation for a mathematician will say, he is as good as so-and-so, he is not as good as so-and-so, but he's better than so-and-so. And he's worked on the following problems, and these problems are this, that, or the other's importance. And you get to reading the letter, you know exactly who the guy is.
Yeah.
The social science part of all rhetoric.
Well, I have the feeling that we have suffered in a reverse sense from the leadership of the scientists, in that they do not understand how the social sciences as disciplines are organized. They do not know where to go, either for the top people or for people who will tell them where the top people are. In other words, the capacity to recruit is not as strong or as intelligent.
Well, I think it's their own fault.
It's their own fault, but they...
But see, the trouble is, basically, I used to fight a lot with them about it. I said, what is your subject matter? The sciences always have that referent outside themselves, you know. And you judge against that referent. It either fits that referent or it doesn't. The social sciences have a rather ill-defined subject matter. And therefore, the research they do cannot achieve quite the same kind of confirmation unless they go into statistics. But I think that a lot of what they do, frankly, is half-assed mathematics. See, some of my best friends are mathematicians, and I reflect their attitudes, you know. But that's their own fault. I think, A, it's owing to the subject matter and the discipline per se. See, when Harry was working in a particular aspect of psychology, which was conformable to experiment and verification, and broad people of that quality was fine. As soon as I moved away from that, it broke down. And I never regarded anyhow psychology as a social science, at least the way Harry was practicing it.
No, it wasn't the way Harry was.
It's a behavioral science. Yeah. In other words, it described human behavior. Now, I thought that's what sociology was supposed to do, and the large sense, I never could get it defined.
No.
Very well.
Another question which you certainly have gone into, what were your priorities in building on the base you found in place?
Well, getting as good as I could possibly get it to be.
Yes. I was thinking in terms of balance. An even balance at the level of excellence across the board.
I wanted excellence across the board and a few departments to be super excellent. But I didn't want anybody to fall below a certain level. You cannot have a graduate school on that basis, you say. I don't think we achieved that. We had some excellent peaks, but some of the valleys were a little dismal. You know, one has to say that. I'm worried about the future. I don't know what's going to happen here.
The future of Stony Brook or the future of graduate education?
No, I'm not worried about the future of graduate education. The need for keeping at the cutting edge will always be there.
Yeah.
And if we don't do it, somebody else will.
Yes.
I meant the future of the state system in general, but particularly Stony Brook. I don't much care about the state system, really. In a certain sense, there's nothing I can do. But I am worried about Stony Brook, whether it will ever achieve potential which was there. For a moment, I think we came this much of grasping it, and then we fell back. And I blame, if I blame Albany, I should also blame our faculty. They, when the chips were down, they didn't want to make that push. They chose comfort. Put it bluntly.
Security.
They made it. They didn't want to go any more than that. I had that strong sense in the years after I retired as dean. And what it is now, I don't know, of course.
Well, I think Jerry Schubel, as provost, is a pusher.
Yes, I know he is.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted him as my successor as dean.
Oh, did you?
But no one asked him. It was very interesting. Neither Johnny nor Alec nor Sidney allowed me to enter in the search for my successor. I guess they'd had enough of me, but...
Well, I just don't understand these things. As long as Johnny was there, I felt that I could make suggestions anytime I wanted.
He was good at that.
But since then?
No.
No.
I don't know what the... I forget what his name, Marburger. By all accounts, he seems to be a very decent and cultivated man. He doesn't strike me as being on fire.
I just don't feel I know him.
No, I don't think anybody does.
I don't feel I know him. Let's see. I had major appointments and principal achievements. I think you've handled that.
Well, once I became dean, I was not responsible for individual appointments, of course. But I did participate in all hiring and promotion and tenure decisions. I wrote my recommendations. I took that part of my job very seriously.
Yeah.
I left to read the dossier. For one thing, I knew more about people than they thought I did.
Yeah.
And so I could get a good fix on that part, you know. But, there's relatively simple criteria that you can track down for each person. And really what I was looking for, this being a large university, I didn't expect everybody to be a distinguished research scholar. But I wanted everybody to make some kind of contribution to the university. What I hated most of all is guys who were unidentifiable for anything. I very often wanted people promoted because they were good teachers. Now, that may seem like a contradiction for the dean of a graduate school. But we did have a strong undergraduate component. Indeed, I don't think you can really have a good graduate school without good undergraduate work. So if a guy couldn't publish, in many cases it's just as well that people don't publish, to at least let him devote himself to his teaching.
Right.
But we didn't have that too much of that.
Right. What about support from the administration, in other words, local and central? Did you get some good support for that?
I got good support. Yeah, I would have, well, naturally, like everybody else, I would have wanted more. But I was always fighting for more assistantships. At first, I got large numbers of them. I would have preferred to have gotten the overhead money to plow back into the departments. But that was kept for wrong reasons.
Siphoned off
for administrative emergency on Johnny's and Alex's level. I thought that was a mistake. Because I knew that at other institutions, that kind of money was siphoned back, sent back to the departments. Both to the departments that generated it and to the departments that didn't generate it.
Well, I think part of the reason was that the central office was taking funds and that were generated by Stony Brook and distributing them around.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
For a while, the vice president of business had control of that, and he used that to prop up his operation. I could have gotten that early on, but you remember that when I became dean, there was someone in charge of research who brought up Johnny's office, and he got kicked out. They caught him with his hand in the till.
Oh, yes.
And then when I got hold of his budget, I noticed that it was supporting all kinds of things that I wished not to support and didn't want to be identified with. I wouldn't take it. And I guess maybe that was a mistake. I should have taken it and purged it. But I was too new in the job to do that. But you know, the money, after a while, I don't know what the situation is now. It's the OR5 I'm talking about. What it's called now, I think it's called some other mystic number. But I went, naturally, I never got enough assistantships.
Obviously, right. Well, they've had a freeing up of the use of funds.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
As a result of the commission appointed by Horton, it was a high-level commission, and made a very forceful report, and the legislature reacted to it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not as fully as it should, but this has given them, on the local level, freedom
to transfer,
yes. That didn't have before.
That requires all the more strong administrative.
Absolutely.
And knowing where you want to go.
Yes.
And you can't placate everybody. You shouldn't placate everybody. Really like that. I never much worried about consistency. You'd say to me, but look, you gave him. I said, yes. But he's not you. And you have to do that. I long ago decided that the only way I could make the job tolerable for myself was to be honest about it and say what I thought, but act on it. You know. I think lots of people dislike me. In fact, I was surprised that so many people attended my farewell dinner. My reason, I think the reason is that they all wanted to make sure I was going. But
central level, central administration.
Muddy. Central administration could never make up its mind how committed it was to the university center concept. And it played politics with the four-year colleges endlessly. I understand the political and economic imperative behind that. There were many towns in New York that would go broke if it weren't for the four-year college that's located there. I understand that. But they didn't have to give them as much as they did on any basis of academic merit.
There's an egalitarianism throughout, and a suspicion, envy.
He's talking about a distinguished professor, an Arianta comparable to a distinguished professor at Stony Brook. And maybe that our distinguished professor might not have been the greatest shucks, but I'm willing to bet he was a greater shuck than the one there.
Right.
I never got much sense of strong leadership in all of them. I forgot who
were you there when Horton came?
Yes. I left Michigan State before he came.
To Michigan State?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I didn't know him at all at Michigan State. I'd say, who was his predecessor?
At Michigan State?
No, in New York.
In New York? It was Ernie Boyer.
Ernie Boyer. Yeah. Boyer went on to bigger, better things. Again, I never had the sense that Boyer was a very forceful guy. But I see that both he and Wharton were raised to the next highest level of incompetence.
Carnegie Endowment.
Yes, and TIA.
TIA. Well, that takes Wharton out of the active educational.
On the other hand, it's a greater concern to me with TIA than he was as chancellor, because my annuity is tied up with his decisions.
Right.
So I have a particular personal reason for being concerned.
What about unfinished business when you left? What remained to be done?
Everything. It was too soon. Too soon. We hadn't reached any kind of stability. Stony Brook started off with trouble. That damn drug raid got Stony Brook off balance for a long time. I'm not even sure it ever really recovered from that. A An institution that had been in business a long time could have absorbed that, but that really knocked us askew. I thought that was a terrible...
In what sense?
Well, I've got students and administration at loggerheads from the very beginning, and younger faculty. And we never were able to pull it all together again. We never had a sense, a concept of institutional loyalty. Neither students nor faculty. There was departmental loyalty, there was discipline loyalty. But there never was Stony Brook loyalty.
What about the concept of a college, the undergraduate college, such as you have at Harvard, for instance, or Yale?
Never saw that at Stony Brook.
Because that is essentially at Harvard, that is the basis of their financial strength. People give to Harvard College.
Oh, yes. But we don't have that kind of alumni.
No.
Brooklyn College doesn't have that kind of alumni. But now I'm afraid that's out of the question. Michigan has that kind of alumni. Now we have to get our money the hard way. That's all right. We don't, Stony Brook never developed a style. You go to the big established institutions, there's a kind of aura about the place that says, we've been doing this a long time, doing it this way, and that's our way. Stony Brook was never known for politesse. Part of that,
campus is looking better.
Yeah. Part of that is Johnny. He was not what you would call a leader in style.
Yeah.
He had a style, but it was not a style that brought people together. But that's all right. Actually, style is something the faculty ought to do.
Yeah.
But it's typical that we could never maintain a faculty club. People wouldn't pay their bill. It was as simple as that.
Yeah. The give and take among faculty, the trade in ideas, and the sense of cohesion.
No, we never had that.
That still remains to be done.
Never had that.
And it's institutional construction, not physical construction.
No, of course. It's attitude.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected it of Johnny, who was too busy building the place. I would have expected it of Marburger, who was much more suave by everything I understand.
But he, his wife... I probably shouldn't say
that.
I guess I won't.
You can say that. Going out of it twice.
Okay. At the present time, the humanities are scattered. English is in the old humanities building. The languages are in the library. Philosophy is in old physics. Religion has been moved from old physics now to old chemistry.
Of course, music has its own facility with art.
Yes, music and the arts have
a facility. Those are performing arts.
Yes.
They have a legitimate right to be together.
Yes. But the others are scattered.
Well, that was one of Johnny's desires to have a humanities building. In fact, didn't he not at one time want a humanities tower?
I think so. I think so. Well, I think if you're going to try to bring the humanities together in some physical location, anywhere near the library, you're going to have to go up.
Yeah, I didn't object to that.
You're going to have to go up.
I think it's a mistake to have offices in library. I think a library should be a library.
They're going to have to get the languages out of there because they'll need the space within
Four they're very isolated there.
Yeah.
And they thrive in isolation, obviously.
So I think it's got something's got to be done within a period of 4 or 5 years.
Well, they could, if necessary, even renovate one of the old buildings and put them all together.
I suppose so.
But it was interesting. That was something Johnny wanted. I never could get very far with that. He might have the time.
Yeah. What about the quality of the student body?
I can't speak for the undergraduate, because frankly, when I went back to teaching, I didn't go back to graduate teaching. I'd been away too long. It had been foolish of me to try to teach a graduate course. The graduate students would run right all over me. I hadn't kept up. But I have to confess to my sorrow that I had difficulty relating to the undergraduate. We simply didn't speak each other's language. But while I was dean, the quality graduate student was pretty damn good. I kept track of that. We didn't require the GRE for entrance, but I required it as a condition of application. I got around that. Several departments did require it as a condition. I left that as a matter for departments to decide. Kind of curious, since even though I was on the GRE board, I didn't make it an absolute requirement. But I did want it for my own purposes. I wanted to know how we compared with the other.